This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Is electrification really climate friendly? Are renewables recyclable? Where do batteries go when they die? This is For Tech's Sake, a co-production from Head Stuff and Silicon Republic. We're your hosts, Jenny Darmody
and Elaine Burke.
And it's a new year.
It's a new year. Happy New Year, all.
Happy New Year. And we're going to be talking about batteries and energy and power. But first, Jenny's got the power.
I've got the power.
Jenny, you have some news?
I do. I am now officially the editor of Silicon Republic.
Woo! Yay! Go, Jenny! And I am not. So I am moving away from Silicon Republic, but not from For Tech's Sake. You'll be glad to know, I'm sure. And
I wouldn't let her leave.
We're going to keep doing this podcast, but Jenny is now the head of the team at Silicon Republic. It's so exciting.
It's very exciting. Please hold your claps. I'm just going to assume everybody's cheering from far away.
Yes, absolutely. But we have to talk about batteries, Jenny.
Oh, batteries.
Batteries.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's very sexy and exciting. I don't know why you're making negative voices at me.
I mean, I feel like I think they're cool, but I never understood them. And I think a lot of people, you know, they're the things that roll around the bottom of your drawer.
Yeah.
When you have to replace them and then we do nothing with them, which is bad, which we'll talk about. But yeah, they are. They're kind of, I feel like they're an unsung hero that we don't talk about enough in tech.
Completely unsung. Most people don't think about them unless maybe at Christmas just gone when they got their kids a lot of gifts and needed batteries that they hadn't provided. But, you know, the one, when we think of batteries, we probably think of like your AA or AAA or whatever batteries. But there's batteries and bloody everything you use, you know, like your laptop has a battery, your phone has a battery, all of your lovely portable technology exists because we're able to have battery tech.
Yeah.
This is what has enabled the great tech revolution.
Yeah. It's everything that's electronic, really. It has some sort of battery storage, charging abilities somewhere.
And the advances in batteries, as much as with silicon chips and making them smaller, the advances in making batteries smaller but still powerful has been just as significant. Otherwise, we'd all be still going around with that Zach Morris phone that existed because the battery had to be so big and so heavy to enable a portable device. But now we've got, you know, your smartphone, which, you know, of all the features that are in it that we go crazy about, I think the real killer feature is always the battery.
Yeah.
You want the phone to last. Now, lasting in this day and age means you get a whole day out of it of continuous usage. That's good going. I mean, gone are the days of the Nokia 3310, RIP. Oh,
they lasted so long. Like, I think I forgot my charger on one of those when I went away on holidays for a week, and it was still going at the end. And to be fair, and I'm not a tech gadget expert or someone who reviews tech regularly, but I did recently switch smartphone to Nokia, and that is still the thing that they are big into. Like, my battery really does last. Like, with moderate use, like 2 days.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, continuous use, 1 day. But still, like, it's a real, like, thing. I would have had to charge my smartphone multiple times a day normally for, like, your standard smartphone. And I think we've all just gotten used to that.
Yeah. We kind of expect the end of the day, start of the day recharge to be a thing. Or we expect to have chargers everywhere we go.
Like power banks.
Yeah, power banks. But even like on the bus or on the train or whatever, you expect to be able to plug in and charge up. And so this expectation is a funny one, the way it's arisen so quickly among us. We just demand power energy all the time. And remember, you could actually, like, in those old phones, literally rip them open and remove the battery if the phone was acting up, which would happen a lot in old tech. And those batteries, like, a lot of the weight of the phone, you take that out of the shell of the phone.
So
and
light.
The phone was so light, and then it was all the weight was in the battery. Like, they're chunky boys.
Yeah.
And now they're all slim and built in, and you can't remove them. You can't even get at them, which is really bad for repair and the circular economy.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that you can't take out yourself is always going to be a problem. I've had a similar thing with a laptop that had, I don't think it was the battery that couldn't be removed. I think it was a hard drive, but it was, you know, for the bin. And I took that to a guy who specializes in repairing and circular economy, and he was like, I would have ripped these laptops from every shop as soon as they came out because I knew this would be a problem. But for batteries, this is why the EU is actually working on regulations to make batteries more sustainable. So in 2020, the European Commission issued a proposal to modernise legislation around batteries to reduce their environmental impact. And then in December just gone, there at the end of 2022, the lawmakers agreed on what those rules actually are. So it kind of means, say, from 2024, all batteries that are placed on the EU market will be subject to mandatory requirements to ensure that they're sustainable, they're high performing, and they're safe throughout their life cycle, which is really important. And these would be things like ensuring they're made from a certain amount of recycled materials, restricting the use of hazardous substances, but also it's about, you know, meeting used battery collection and recycling targets. And as I said, they, you know, roll around the bottom of people's drawers all the time.
Yeah.
This is a huge move, though, because most people do think about those AAA batteries that you need for your remote control or you need charging your phone battery and things like that. But as you said, they're in so much more than that. Like, batteries have a huge footprint in the world by themselves.
Yeah, and now you can have electric batteries in your car. Now, cars have always had batteries, you know, and we've all had, well, anyone who's had a car has had that experience of their battery going flat and having to jumpstart it and all that kind of crack. But the batteries in electric vehicles are a different beast altogether. And, you know, it creates this idea that going electric is environmentally friendly. But I hate to break it to you guys, you are charging that car off of a dirty fossil fuel ridden grid for your single person mode of transport in a lot of cases.
Yeah, not the best.
And when the companies that have driven a lot of issues in the climate crisis and stuff like that are behind this technology, then you know it's got a problem. Because the automakers that are now switching to electric vehicles, because countries are literally saying we only want electric vehicles on the road in the future. That's not great, because it still means that we'll have more cars than we really should reasonably have for a sustainable climate conscious economy and society, because we should really be moving towards more kind of group modes of transport and public transport and those kind of modes of transport. Now, electrification of public transport fleets is absolutely happening as well. And that's really good to see. I'm much, much happier to see electric and hydrogen fueled buses than cars, because I think our obsession with cars is unhealthy. And I think that the automakers being on board with this is just going to mean, oh, we're just going to keep selling new cars every year. Yeah. And like, their sales are going up, car sales. So we definitely have more cars than is reasonable. You see so many households with more than one car. Mm. And I understand why that happens, because it's for people to get around. It's because they don't have sufficient alternatives.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm not saying, like, oh, get rid of your car or you're a horrible beast. I think we should be campaigning for better public transport infrastructure. Well, that's that rent over. But just going back to those electric vehicle batteries, talk about beasts. Yeah. Those batteries are beasts. They're the real chunky boys.
Yeah.
They're the oh lord, she coming of batteries.
Yeah.
And she's coming for your environment.
Yeah. We're talking about the big lithium ion batteries. These are not your granny's AA batteries. These are more powerful, but they come with their own problems. So for a start, they use cobalt, which is a byproduct of nickel and copper mining, and it's a finite resource. So there's only so much of it in the world. And using finite resources for something that is currently so in demand and so disposable, like smartphones or even cars that get changed so often, is problematic on its own. But also, cobalt has another problem in that 2/3 of the world's supply of cobalt is sourced from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and human rights organisation Amnesty International has noted that child labour is strongly linked to that industry in the country. So that's a really big problem. But also, materials like this, as you know, the EU mentioned about reducing hazardous materials in batteries. Lithium ion batteries have hazardous materials. If they're not disposed of properly, they're really, really dangerous. And that is something that people have to be wary of, even in their own like household devices and things like that. You know, like if a battery is, you know, past its lifetime, shall we say, they can become dangerous. They can degrade over time and be quite dangerous and harmful. So there's a lot of problems with lithium ion batteries.
Oh yeah, 100%. But I'm sure we all dispose of batteries responsibly, right, listeners? Don't you? You definitely bring them to those wee recycling boxes that are at supermarkets everywhere. I'm sure you do. You definitely do this.
I will be only moderately smug. I do have a box of them at home. I will not throw them out in general waste, but every time I go to the supermarket, I see the box and I'm like, damn it, I forgot to bring the batteries. And that's been happening for a solid year, folks. So it's okay. Don't feel too bad, but don't throw them in general waste if you can help it. At least try and collect them and remember to bring them to the wee boxes.
At the very, very, very least, never, ever throw a battery in the bin. That's an awful, awful thing to do. We have enough problems with what's going into landfill without making it even worse. So we know that not everyone is recycling responsibly. And certainly when it comes to batteries, it's no different. And there is tons of battery tech and other electronic waste going to landfill. And actually, that's, I think, one of the key motivations of the EU regulation, because this is coming off the back of the universal charger regulation that they moved towards as well. And that was about tackling e-waste, because the amount of electronic waste is shocking, and it's getting worse the more we electrify things and want multiple mobile devices connected to the internet, and we just create these complex, all fused together, unrepairable bitty devices that are a heap of trash.
All with their own individually boxed up charger that doesn't work on anything else. and I don't want to call out specifically, but Apple specifically hate that regulation. They hate it because we all know the Apple charger is a very specific looking type of charger. Other chargers, there is a little bit of universally acceptable thing already there. I have used different chargers for different things. Apple fits nothing except Apple, and they hate it. But they have to do it. They have to bring in the universal charger because regulations.
Yeah.
Good job, EU.
They love a bit of proprietary tech, does Apple. But they are starting to warm up or cop on to the way the world is going, because they are also joining or kind of appeasing the right to repair movement as well. Because that's the other thing about Apple's proprietary technology. They have proprietary screws.
Yeah.
So like, to actually repair Apple devices, you needed like a special screwdriver. It's not your Phillips head or anything even remotely like that. So, but they are now providing people, individuals, not just, you know, specialists working in tech providers or something like that, people with the tools and the documentation to try and do their own repairs and self-repair. And that's really, really important for sustainable economies and circular economies and stuff like that.
Yeah, good job, Apple too, sort of. Progress. But we have so many devices, smart devices, smart home, Internet of Things, like it just keeps going. But I assume we need to think about getting smart about energy as well.
Yeah. If you want smart tech, you need to get smart about energy.
Yeah.
And like, smart devices are essentially called smart because they're internet connected. But if they're internet connected, they're typically mobile and need power.
Yeah.
Which means there's some sort of battery or energy harvesting tech has to be built in there as well. And someone who's very smart about energy and batteries is Dr. Valeria Nico. She is a postdoctoral research fellow in the area of energy harvesting at the Bernal Institute. And the Bernal Institute is a material science research centre located at the University of Limerick. We're very lucky that scientists such as Valeria have come to Ireland to join an incredible network of researchers to work on the future of power from this country. And I spoke to her last year about her research and how we can generate power for small, low-energy devices from the ambient environment. Batteries not included. And here's what she had to say. So thanks so much, Valeria, for coming and talking to me today. To start with, how about a bit of background on how you came to be at the Bernal Institute and what is the Bernal Institute?
Okay, so the Bernal Institute is the research institute within the University of Limerick that focuses mainly on material science. So, but it's covering both the more science part, but also in engineering. So how we can use those materials in real application. I joined UL in 2013 when I came for my PhD. So I have a degree in physics from the University of Perugia in Italy. And I joined UL and then the Bernal Institute for my PhD in vibrational energy harvesting.
Now, that's exactly what we want to talk about today. So how would you explain vibrational energy harvesting?
So I think probably the easiest way, imagine it as a way to convert ambient vibration that are everywhere into electricity to power small sensors. So instead of having your battery, you can use the energy that is in the environment to power your electrical device.
Yeah, so when I was in school, I think this would have been junior cert level science, we called that kind of energy of movement like kinetic energy.
Because, yes.
Because everything is energy in its own kind of way, and kinetic energy could be described as, you know, any kind of movement, I suppose. Am I right there? How is my junior cert science told
me? No, that's correct. It's what we want to do is actually convert kinetic energy into electrical energy. And kinetic energy is everywhere, from human motion, so someone running in a car, so all the vibration of the engines, or on a bridge, and so on. So,
and the kind of work that you're doing is about trying to harness that kind of energy, say, from the natural motion that's occurring in an environment for small devices, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, we are targeting very small devices, so all the sensors that form the so-called Internet of Things. So Internet of Things is this collection of objects that can talk to each other and talk to the internet and they collect data. So imagine your smart home, so all the sensors that maybe regulate the temperature in the house so that it's always nice at 20 degrees, or in a factory, all the sensors that regulate the movement of materials around the factory or the state of all the equipment. So all those sensors need only very small quantities of energy that you can actually take from the ambient without using batteries.
And would that be in the case of a factory, say if a sensor is installed on a machine, just any natural kind of vibrational movement in that machine could be harnessed and turned into energy?
Correct. If the machine vibrates to work, for example, compressors or like motors, they would anyway vibrate when they're working. So it's possible to use that energy, that kinetic energy, to power the sensor.
It's amazing. I've heard of this kind of conversion of electricity being used also, I believe it's researchers in Tyndall were using it to power pacemakers with the beats of the heart itself. Like, it's amazing to think of what you can do just by converting the one form of energy that's kind of ambient, as you said, into another. But this is good when we're talking about small devices that are low energy, but could this kind of technology scale if you're able to crack it with all the research that you're doing?
So the whole principle of energy harvesting is targeting very small devices so that we can put our sensor in the environment and we completely forget about it. Large scale, let's say, renewable form of energy already exists. If you think of all the solar farms or wind farms, or even when we were using like the power of water, so the hydroelectric power plants. So they already exist. That it's kind of easy. They can be big, so we don't care. Like, they can generate a lot of power. for sensors, it's where things get harder because we want something small, invisible, that generates a lot of energy.
So you have to create components that are small enough to fit on tiny devices that can harness energy. Amazing. And let's talk a little bit about that Internet of Things that you mentioned. It's something that I'd be very familiar with, having written about it a lot. But for people who wouldn't know, what kind of things constitute the Internet of Things and how big is the Internet of Things?
So it's very big. So it is estimated that by 2025, there will be like 20 billions of sensors connected to the internet. So this is a huge number if we consider that all of these sensors are mainly battery powered. So the Internet of Things is basically just electronic devices connected to each other in a network that can take measurements, can gather data. And it's kind of everywhere at this stage, like from smart homes, in smart cities, movement of tracking goods moving all around the world on containers, transportation. Like it's becoming like everywhere.
And it can be so useful, like you were saying there, like, you know, there's a lot of people getting used to having smart devices in their home, things that they can operate while they're outside of the home. In the logistics sector, it's used for tracking, packaging and stuff like that. It's also used very much in industry and manufacturing and stuff like that. So it really, like, it has proven its use cases, but all of those many, many devices all need some sort of a power source. So what would then be the scale of battery use? 20 billion sensors is 20 billion, some form of batteries, I suppose.
Yeah, so obviously we'll need lots of batteries. And if we consider just Ireland, because it's a small enough country, but if we think about it, in 2021, there were 1,085 tons of small batteries that were collected for recycling. And not all the batteries are collected. So roughly like... The 46%, I think, last year was collected by We Ireland for recycling. So, and it's 1,085 tons that correspond to roughly 1,300 Fiat 500. So I'm Italian. So if I have to give you a unit, what better than the Fiat car? Yeah. So yeah,
it's and that's just what we can account for. Like we don't even know the amount that aren't being disposed of responsibly.
Exactly. Really.
Yeah, and please, if you do have any batteries at home, do dispose of them in those wee boxes that you can find in supermarkets and anywhere that sells batteries. I mean, it's really important that we dispose of these things safely, right?
Yeah, also because we can recycle most of the components of the battery. So it's very important that we can recycle as much material as possible, because then it means that we don't need to mine those materials again. And also mining heavy materials has a strong impact on the environment, because there are all the heavy metals that are released then in the soils and the water.
Yeah.
So if the more we can recycle what we have already, the better. Mm.
And the more that we can do amazing things with technology, like the kind of research that you're powering through, which is to maybe not even need the standard battery that we've become so familiar with at all, to kind of harness energy from and store it in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. We still need to find a way to store energy. Mm. So if you think of a sensor on a bridge, you get vibration only when there is traffic. So we can harvest that energy and we still need to store it. But thankfully in Ireland, we have brilliant scientists and researchers in general that are investigating new materials and new form of storage systems.
Yeah, there's incredible work going on here, not only in the electronic side, but also the material side as well. We've heard of incredible things coming out of Ireland there. But you mentioned as well that the problem with energy harvesting in this kind of way is this instability of the energy source and how to store it and stuff like that. That comes up actually in the question about renewable energy sources as well. People say, well, if the wind's not blowing, if the sun's not shining, how stable is renewable energy as a source as well? How can harnessing multiple energy sources help to combat this?
So this is actually something we are looking into in the Connect Center. So I'm also part of the SFI Connect Center, that is the center for future communication and telecommunication. So there is a research area, so a working group just on sustainable IoT. And we are looking at the possibility to integrate different type of energy harvesting technique. So for example, harvesting vibration and solar energy or vibration and thermal gradient to increase the amount of energy that we are generating, but also to make it more reliable.
Mm. Yeah, because that's yeah. obviously really important. If we're going to have an energy stable future, we need kind of reliability and storage and all that stuff to come around yeah. as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And we are lucky in Ireland because we have the scientists and all the SFI centers are trying to bring the expertise together. So all together we can come up with solution.
And I notice a lot of, not all of battery science research, but a lot of it is looking at trying to create a more kind of circular economy of batteries as well. Like you spoke earlier about trying to reharvest back the materials that are used in batteries is important as well. And if we can crack that, I mean, we've really nailed it in terms of this whole future of power. And I just wonder, how far out do you think we are from having... very speculative question, of course. Like, I'm not asking it to be really definitive here, but like, is this kind of technology that you're working on years to go still really, or decades to go? Or
so there are already commercially available energy harvesters. So something like Perpetuum, that is a UK company, or Kinergizer, that I think it's a Swedish company. So there are companies that produce vibrational energy harvester solution, so that you can power your sensors without batteries. So I think the challenge is convincing the user that it's possible, and convincing the user that, but like, to change a bit, obviously, the way they are collecting the data, because you can't collect data all the time, but you have to collect data when you have the energy.
Oh, that's
really
interesting
point. And be smarter with what you do when you have energy.
Yeah, so there's obviously a question of efficiency here as well. And if we become very, very comfortable as users, not just as technology in our daily lives, but in our workplaces as well, if we get very, very comfortable with this always on sense of being, well, then that's actually probably not going to fit really well with the sustainable technology future or sustainable energy future.
Exactly. Like, we need to be smarter with what we do when we have energy. And I think we'll have to be smarter going forward anyway.
Yeah, I think this year might actually help a lot of people come to terms with that. I think no one's talked about or thought about energy nearly as much as they might have as in 2022. Yeah. It's really come to the fore, and it's so great to know there's people like yourself here in Ireland working on amazing technologies that can hopefully create fixes for the future. And it was so great to learn about that. Thank you so much for that.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
The Podcast Studios is the home of the Headstuff Podcast Network. It's where lots of our shows are recorded, and we work on editing, promotion, videos, live shows, and lots more. As a podcast production company with 3 state-of-the-art studios for audio and video in Dublin City Centre, we can work with you to tell great stories in a professional and engaging way. From government organisations to charities, arts groups to international brands, entrepreneurs to hobbyists, we've worked with everybody, and we can help you to get the word out. Whether you need studio time, you're hosting a live stream or webinar, or you need support with editing or marketing, we can tailor a package for you. For more info, head to thepodcaststudios.ie.
See, I told you, scientists are doing amazing things with battery tech.
Yeah, I have to agree. Go Valeria.
Yeah, and she's not even the only Valeria in Ireland who's working in materials for batteries and battery technology. Valeria Nicolosi, who's based out of AMBER, the Trinity Material Science Research Centre, she's won awards and lots of grants and stuff for the work that she does in that kind of technology. There's amazing battery science happening here in Ireland. Batteries are exciting.
I mean, they are exciting. I have to agree. Turns out batteries and power is very, very sexy.
I'm glad you agree.
Yeah.
And I love how these forward-thinking scientists are kind of going back to basics with energy sources. Like kinetic energy is something you learn about in junior cert science, like I said in the conversation with Valeria, and it can be used for large-scale power as well.
Yeah, it's actually amazing. And it's something that I, because it's kind of in physics, and physics I used to shy away from physics in school, but like it's just so fascinating because kinetic energy is like the energy that, you know, is derived from movement. So if you think about like hydropower dams, they work using kinetic energy. So whatever electricity generation exceeds demand, the excess electricity is used to pump water up a dam. And then when the demand exceeds generation, that water falls and its movement gives energy, which then turns turbines to produce electricity. It's so cool. But the problem with hydro dams is that they take like a decade, if not more, to build. And they need a very specific type of geography. They need, you know, access to sufficient water, like a reservoir or a river or something like that. And they need altitude as well. They need to be quite high up to get that level of gravity. So they're great, but they're not the easiest thing in the world to build everywhere. Mm-hmm. But now there are companies using that principle and coming up with other solutions. So one UK-based startup called Re-Energize is working on a way to make this possible with like smaller hills all by themselves. So, you know, they just use the gravity of the actual hills and they don't need the big water dams and things like that. And then there's another one in Switzerland, Energy Vault, and that is literally using stacks of concrete blocks and a crane to store energy. So there you go. Concrete and hills as batteries.
Yeah, like the concept of a stack of concrete blocks equals energy storage. It's just, it's so simple but mind-blowing at the same time. It's so cool. There's even research into how elevator shafts of buildings, we've got all these tall skyscraper buildings. Course. And all that space inside that could be used for the generation and storage of energy in the same way. And heat's a form of energy as well. And it's one that we're losing all the time. We waste heat energy constantly in this world. And you know what generates a lot of heat? Data centers.
Yeah. So like your laptop can feel hot when it's running on for too long. That's like, you know, heat energy that again is being lost because we're just like, the laptop is too hot. I can only imagine a warehouse sized room full of stacks and stacks and stacks of computing units. I mean, that's hot.
That's hot. That's where a lot of the energy costs for data centers actually comes from. So it's needed to keep, you need to keep those places cool because you don't want the systems to overheat and burn out. And that's also incidentally why Ireland and other northern countries are quite popular as data center locations, because it doesn't get too hot here in our natural environment. That's why we've ended up in the situation we're in.
Yeah. And that's why we find ourselves in a situation where data centers are getting a lot of slack or a lot of flack for, you know, existing simply in the country, because we have a lot of them and there's a lot of plans to have a lot more. But this is something that I suppose it's this little bit of a side to the battery thing, but I always want to give that argument a little bit of side eye. I'm not saying data centers are not problematic, but there's not a bunch of data centers sitting around doing nothing. You know, they're not sitting there kind of empty and wasting energy and things like that in an energy crisis. They're actually being built because of the demand. They're being built because of the volume and the level of data that we all use. And we're forcing the need for data centers in the first place. So they are, as people say, a necessary evil, I think. But they do create a lot of energy problems. But we shouldn't be just saying, you know, get rid of them outright and condemning them and being like, no more data centers, because that's not the solution. But we should be looking at, you know, maybe data centers could be a solution to the problem that they're even creating because of the aforementioned heat.
Yeah, I mean, like you can't want Netflix streaming to your home constantly and not have data centers. That is definitely something to bear in mind. Now, I do also think like you do not have to have all those memes stored in all those data centers. We need to get on top of our digital detritus. But the thing that they can do is harness the heat energy that they're generating and essentially wasting most of the time. So they can actually become a source of energy as well as something that consumes it. So some countries have actually been doing this for years, and Ireland is finally getting on the bandwagon. So in Dublin, an energy efficiency agency called Codema has partnered with an Amazon data centre in Tala to capture the waste heat that they emit and use it to heat homes and council buildings. And that initiative is part of the Tala district heating scheme, and it was the first large scale district heating network of its kind and in Ireland.
Yeah, and it's been operating since early 2022, I believe. But as usual, there are caveats and kinks to work out, as with all moves towards more sustainable models. Because in this case, for example, there are concerns over efficiency of the process, because only a percentage of the heat being released so far actually makes its way to the homes. And there's the additional electricity required to transport this heat that needs to be taken into account. So there's a lot of kinks to it, but like, it's still a move in the right direction.
Exactly. Like, unsurprisingly, there are no quick fixes. And in this day and age, you have to take a broad perspective on impacts to ensure that your good is actually doing good. Because sometimes, like, we want so hard to have easy solutions that we kind of forget that, oh, that's a solution that solves this problem but creates these other problems. So we just need to be basically creating circular economies of power.
Yeah, because even with renewables, the energy source we absolutely need to shift towards, and the sooner the better, there are waste implications there as well.
Yeah, because we're now at the stage where things like photovoltaic panels from early adopters of solar energy, they're now reaching their end of life, their end of use, and we need the facilities to effectively recycle these. And like, these are big pieces of equipment, and they're not, you know, like with everything, recycling is not easy. And it's definitely not easy when you've not thought of the end of life in the engineering to begin with. So that's a whole new industry that's emerging. And because we can't have the good of renewable energy become another issue of waste that's not tackled, like, it's a really important one to get on top of.
Yeah, and there are a lot of new businesses emerging around that opportunity as well. German startup Tozero is gaining investment for its battery recycling tech, and CEO Sarah Fleischer says this business is about allowing us to enter the electrification era without worries, because we do need all this science and technology working in tandem at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And another researcher in Europe, actually, Anne van der Bruggen, she's received EU backing and awards for her revolutionary new way of extracting graphite from lithium-ion batteries using what's described as a separation jacuzzi.
Ooh, that's hot.
Sexy battery recycling now. So this process can actually recover up to 98% of the graphite in batteries, along with some other valuable materials. So it's all about contributing to this like idea of a circular battery supply chain. And that's just a form of business we should be working towards in all cases now.
Yeah, and that also goes back to the people developing batteries and energy storage and the work going into the materials used there, and how we might optimize for better sustainability and more environmentally sound practices there.
Absolutely. And the general consensus is that the future is not long for the lithium ion battery.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in some cases, that still means finding other finite and destructive materials such as cobalt to replace it. And that's also not great. But there are other materials that can be used in batteries, and sometimes surprising ones.
Yeah, doesn't the Makey Makey kit use bananas as its power source?
Can use all sorts. Makey Makey's gas.
But they use potatoes as well.
Yeah. And there are scientists that experiment with seaweed. There's water-based batteries being experimented with, even all protein batteries composed of amino acids. Like, the kind of the limits of your imagination will fulfill the scope of this kind of a level of experimentation. And if we use more sustainable materials at the beginning of the process, then we're much better off in the long run when it comes to the end of life, safe disposal and potential reuse. Now, here's a fun fact. Did you know that the co-inventor of the lithium-ion battery, John Goodenough, is still going?
First of all, great name. And second of all, how old is that guy? Is he like 100?
He is.
Is he literally 100?
He has a Nobel Prize in chemistry, and he continued his work into solid state batteries well into the 2010s.
Oh my God. He's not still going now though, is he? It's like 2023.
I hope not. I mean, he deserves a rest. He's not the Duracell bunny.
But bumch.
I will leave it there, I think. Thank you for listening to this episode of For Tech's Sake, and thank you to Dr. Valeria Nico for sharing her expertise with us. You can find out more about Valeria's research and lots more about batteries and the future of power on siliconrepublic.com, and we'll share some starter links in the show notes.
For Tech's Sake is a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Head Stuff Podcast Network. Follow us at Silicon Republic and at For Tech's Sake Pod on your platform of choice, and please subscribe and share and let us know what you think.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.